This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
I love that when you walk through Derry in the autumn, curvaceous oak leaves scatter about your feet. I love the line attributed to St. Columbkill, "Crowded full of heaven's angels is every leaf of the oaks of Derry." I love that on my arrival on a brief September visit to the city this year, head down and in a hurry, I find myself entering Guildhall Square to a vision of unexpected angels. These are womanly angels, winged and haloed in long white dresses, moving together in graceful formation. Unmistakably Derry angels, they have glamorously salon-styled hair and long mascaraed eyelashes. I smile, and an angel smiles back, a smile full of tenderness, as well as pride, a sense of knowing she is part of something beautiful and strange. Yet many people crossing the square simply go on their way as if they see nothing out of the ordinary. The truth is, as they enter into the autumn of their year of culture, they've got blasé in Derry. The Culture Company has delivered wave upon wave of events. I catch the last day of a magnificent retrospective of the sculptures of Eamon O'Doherty, whose memorial to the thousands driven by poverty to emigrate from Derry in the 19th century is on the quays. I catch the opening of a wonderful exhibition of photographs by artist Willie Doherty. Everybody's talking. Journalist and civil rights legend Eamon McCann tells me about Andrei Molodkin's Catholic Blood, in which blood is pulsed through an acrylic replica of the Rose Window at the Houses of Parliament. Someone asks, will I be coming up for the Sam Shepherd play? Did my daughters get to the BBC's One Big Weekend? My mother talks about the tattoo. It was marvellous, she says, better than Edinburgh. I'm talking to a young woman on the terrace of a bar when her friend leans over and asks her, is she going to a concert the next evening? No, she says, I'd like to, but I just don't think I will. I'm all cultured out. They've even renamed the place. Derry was what Catholics called it. Protestants called it Londonderry. The two sides separated by the river, the Irish border hovering invisibly, the hills smudged with mist crouched around. Suddenly, it's Derry, Londonderry. I grew up in what was then a rural village called Drumahoe and is now a suburb, benignly patrolled by golden Labradors with a drive-in Kentucky Fried Chicken, a YMCA and, all summer, huge Union Jacks flying from the lampposts. My father was the headmaster of the local secondary school. I was taught to curtsy, the better to present the lady wife of some unionist grandee with a bouquet of chrysanthemums at a flower show in the Guildhall. At primary school, I competed with one of the boys in my class to see who could get caned most in the course of a day. In 1968, aged 11, I passed the 11 plus, the exam that had given my working class parents and their generation a route to third level education. My rival in the caning contest went to my father's school, became a loyalist paramilitary and went to prison. I went to Londonderry High School for young ladies. Derry was at war. Some girls in the school were from hard estates. Others lived in swanky Talbot Park and went on skiing holidays to the Alps. Few mixed with Catholics. I played trombone in the school orchestra and soldiers from the Royal Anglian Regimental Band played along with us. Down the road, they were killing and being killed by people from the other side. In 1974, my father refused to close his school during the Loyalist workers' strike against power sharing. Orange bands stopped at the gate of our house to bang out that anthem of resistance to change, the sash, with its defiant shout of, "No surrender!" My diary for that year mentions a day my friend Amanda Burton and I walked in our school uniforms alone down a road lined with soldiers during a gun battle with the IRA. What were we thinking of? Undoubtedly, what talent we might spot down the town. Talent was boys with shaggy Rod Stewart hair and Ben Sherman shirts who greeted you, "Yes." A tenth of Derry's buildings were blown up or burned during the 70s. Bars didn't have terraces out on the street then. They had steel shutters and security cameras. Mud from bomb sites flowed down Shipkey Street, and I still have books from the APCK with smoke and water damage sale stickers on them. Derry was bleak and dangerous, but we were young and fearless, and the talent, it has to be said, was good. I fell in love with romantic Ireland. Amanda and I would hitch across the border to Letterkenny to hear Planxty and Christy Moore. We'd take the bus to the Borderlands Ballroom in Muff to hear Horselips. Derry had a great tradition for amateur drama, bravely maintained through the worst of times. We saw classic plays by Sean O'Casey and Oscar Wilde, new ones by Brian Friel. I wrote into my diary, "We're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars," and said of The Plough and the Stars, "So like what is happening today." I noted of Friel that I thought he overstated things a bit, as if I knew. At school, I was being coached for a scholarship to Trinity College Dublin, and I was reading W.B. Yeats's Civil War poems. We had fed the heart on fantasies, the heart's grown brutal on the fair. A city that is built on a hill cannot be hid. We knew we lived in a small town that was an important city. Derry was in the news, and it was in the new writing too. Poets came and came from here. We went to readings by Derek Mahon, John Montague, Michael Longley. We heard Jennifer Johnston reading her fiction and got Seamus Heaney's books full of our own Derry language. I took to going to pubs in the Bogside. I'd sup my underage Guinness and sing along to Leonard Cohen's So Long, Marianne and Republican ballads like Only Our Rivers Run Free. I drink to the death of our manhood. But we also had the undertones in the Casbah, their teenage kicks, our teenage kicks. How fantastic was that? My view that Catholic boys were sexier than Protestants met its match among Catholic boys who thought Protestant girls sexier than Catholics. But not everyone welcomed us. I remember the hatred with which one man hissed at me in a bar, "Get out!" In the Irish shop, I bought my father a single of the rebel song Kevin Barry, a provocative gift which he received in silence. Soon afterwards, one of his friends was murdered by the IRA and his body left lying in a field. Not long after that, a boy I knew to drink with was convicted of murder and IRA membership. By the time I left to go to Trinity in 1975, I was seriously confused. Although it took me many years to realise it, I had been perfectly prepared for a career as a political journalist. Seamus Heaney spoke about a buoyancy attaching to being from Derry, a springiness. It's true. It's quite cool to be able to say you're from Derry. We fancy our accent gentler than harsh Belfast's. I still have a sense of being an outsider, though. My people did not have to march for their civil rights. My people resisted Catholic demands for civil rights. When David Cameron apologised for Bloody Sunday in 2011, in Drumahoe they put up the regimental flag of the Parachute Regiment. A similarly bitter element persists on the Republican side, and dissidents paint warlike graffiti on the walls. Derry is in serious economic trouble, and its poorest areas have remained poor despite the peace. You can hardly see the traffic lights in the city centre for the profusion of hanging baskets, but there are parts of Derry where civic petunias do not bloom. Willie Doherty's recent work includes studies of failed housing developments, desolate alleyways where boys who take drugs are still punished, shot in the legs by men in masks. This is a Derry that cannot be marketed, cannot be branded. After the bombers, the planners. The quays from which ships used to sail to America are blighted now with supermarket car parks. The vast shirt factories that got Derry noticed by Karl Marx have been allowed to crumble into ruin. Sculptor Louise Walsh was commissioned to make a fine piece celebrating the woman who worked in them, but it was never put up. It has been left to rust. My book, Northern Protestants and Unsettled People, gained me respect among nationalists and republicans, but I was regarded as a Lundy among unionists. Lundy was the governor of Derry during the 1689 siege and urged a timely capitulation to King James. For this he was hated and had to flee the city by climbing down the walls through the branches of a pear tree. Lundy's effigy is burned every year at a pageant in Derry to celebrate the shutting of the city's gates by apprentice boys loyal to King William, Billy to us. A unionist politician informed me during a Dublin television debate, "You have made a very good living out of the sufferings of your own people." The war is over. Nowadays, Lundy candles are prized as kitsch items by Derry's political sophisticates. The Turner Prize is to be hosted in what used to be a British Army base. At the party warehouse, for Derry loves to party, a big sign for military costumes has pictures of people in uniform cavorting with guns. Martin McGuinness, in his youth an IRA leader, is the North's Deputy First Minister. While Belfast rioted over loyalist protests about flags and parades this year, McGuinness spoke about how happy he was to see the pride in the eyes of Willie Hay, the speaker at Stormont and a leading unionist, as he led the apprentice boys' parade peacefully through Derry. The gerrymandering that allowed unionism to dominate a city with a nationalist majority is long gone, and the better behaviour of the loyal orders indicates courage, but also a necessary learning of manners. John Hume is weary now after his heroic struggles. Derek Mahon's poem, Derry Morning, has the lines, "For this is how the centuries work, two steps forward, one step back." It also asks, "What of the change envisioned here, the quantum leap from fear to fire?" The UK-based Israeli choreographer Hofesh Schechter and his company spent months in Derry preparing young local dancers and musicians to perform in his political mother show. Some were lambeg drummers from loyalist bands, and some of the dancers had been trained in the separate Scottish or Irish traditions, both of them involving a rigidly straight upper body with much flamboyant activity from the knees down. Schechter got the dancers to relax and to learn to dance with their whole bodies. The show was loud and sexy and extraordinarily powerful. It was liberating. It was life-changing. The sculpture Hands Across the Divide at the city end of Craigavon Bridge provides a sentimental version of the attempt to reconcile the two traditions. The Peace Bridge, by British architects Wilkinson Eyre, has made a real difference. A constant flow of walkers and cyclists cross it, and people stop in the middle to admire what could not be seen before, the dramatic and constantly changing beauty of Derry's setting, of sky and water and hills drenched in Atlantic light. Derry is still a damaged place. It will take confidence, imagination, and far longer than a year to transform it. We need to teach a new generation how to live with the history of its most recent dark times. Eamon O'Doherty wanted his sculpture, Armoured Pram for Derry, to stay in the city, and it would make an ideal first acquisition for a gallery in the space which has been created for the Turner Prize. In the car park beside the lovely Church of St Augustine, school children watch enthralled as archaeologists dig up skeletons from the 17th century. Across the way, Margot Harkin is making a documentary about Frank Cottrell Boyce's spectacular celebration of the saint known to Catholics as Columbkille and Protestants as Columba. St Augustine's is built on the site of his 6th century monastery. The church's minister, Pat Storey, is leaving. She's about to become the first woman Anglican bishop in the UK and Ireland. In one of her last Derry sermons, she spoke about Paul on the road to Damascus and about how, having been wounded, pierced in the soul, there was the need to be forgiven or healed. She tells me she has found Derry to be a place where such healing is attempted. Seamus Heaney died this summer and is buried near his birthplace in County Derry. In 1994, he described the space opened by an end to violence. As defined by Vaclav Havel, he wrote, "Hope is different from optimism. It is a state of the soul rather than a response to the evidence. Derry, grove of oaks, city of ghosts and rain, city of artists and unexpected angels, is surely a place where such hope can grow."